I'll have the meeting come to order. Dawn Campbell sent me a text message. She's on a hospital run, so he will be here, but a little bit later, so we can get started. I think what we'll do is we'll do the minutes and warrants, and then we've got a little bit of a time constraint tonight just with the Civic Association coming in at 7. So what we'll do is we'll deal with everything in the order that it's on the agenda, with the one thing of after we do the warrants and before the superintendent's report, I'll have time for public comment. And if you want to have some comments, but then after that, when Mrs. Miller's here and when Russ is here, we're just going to roll through their work. Okay. All right. So let's. Or you know what? Let's do this. Let me change one other thing. Why don't we do warrants when Dawn gets
okay.
here?
That's fine.
That way we can. We'll finish those up at the end. So, Ted, if you take a look at the minutes.
I'm almost there, buddy.
Okay.
Meeting adjourned at 6:20 p.m. We made it. I make a motion to accept the minutes as written.
If Don was here, he'd second it.
Which,
yeah, just specify whether there's two sets. There's 5:13.
Oh, yeah, I got that. And yeah, I didn't see that here. There's one underneath. So this is the 5:13. This is the minutes from the meeting, 5:13, just the regular meeting. And I make a motion to accept the minutes of the 6:11:14.
Second. Any discussion on either of these?
No.
Okay, that's fine. I find that to be accurate as well.
And what about the executive session?
Why don't you make it? Did you make a separate motion?
I did not yet.
You make a separate motion for that. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I make a motion to accept the minutes of the executive session as read.
Second that. Any further discussion?
Very good.
Okay, I'm accurate. Chris, it doesn't matter which one of these is with the blue ink, right? They're just copies.
Did she give you the thicker paper on those?
No, that's why I asked. They're the same. Usually that version is...
Yeah, usually there's a little thicker paper just to have a legal paper, but as long as you sign it in blue,
yeah,
it'll be an issue.
Doing? You want to sign in?
You can just
sign right here.
Have a seat. Oh, you know, Chris, it was a heavier one.
Is that which one is that?
That's 6:11.
Is that executive session?
Yeah. Yeah. For some reason
that's
I had
fancy paper right there. There's another one right there. There's another one.
Yeah. I had a couple. Oh, you know what? This one was a draft. Not sure that was true. Can't take those back. That was a draft. That's not the final. I think that was a working document.
Oh. sign this document, don't you? This is the meeting. That's the heavier one.
No, I think this is just part, if you look at the two of them, this is just a partial of the minutes. The second one has the two motions in it. Am I reading?
No. This one was the actual meeting itself. This was executive session.
This is the meeting.
It's three different.
We interviewed all the girls.
Oh, okay. Well, I got you now. I just saw the same language in the first paragraph. Got it. We should have like an A and a B.
I get the fancy paper there.
Yeah, I get the
red fancy paper on that one.
That is correct.
Everything is this.
Hi, Phyllis. How are you?
Hi, Phyllis. How are you? Good. It's summertime. Everybody is, right? Summertime. Nice to be out there.
Okay. Minutes are good. So we'll wait on the warrants until Ted's here. So at this point, we'll shift to any public comment. I know, Phyllis, you're on the agenda. Mark, were you? Okay. All right. So you're here with land acquisition. Got it. Okay. And Dan, you're here regarding
the open cave.
Open cave. So obviously you're on the agenda as well. So Amy, did you have comment or any? Okay. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. Just make sure that's on. Thanks.
Amy Cates. First, did you guys get my letter?
The email.
The email.
Yes,
yeah.
I did.
You did. Okay, great. I just wanted to make sure that you did.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, and I just had one other thing to point out, and it said that a public body, when discussing applicants for a position or discussing the qualifications of any individual, these discussions should be held in open session. So all interview and discussion is generally considered to be held in open session. So I just thought I'd point that out as well. And I know it makes it difficult because the Prudential Committee, we interviewed, for an assistant treasurer. And so we had to look at the resumes in open session. We had to interview in open session. We had to vote and discuss in open session by saying candidate one, candidate four, whatever like that. And it made it really cumbersome. And I remember looking back, it's probably 2 years ago, because I haven't served for a year. And then it was a year before that. And I remember thinking, this is really difficult to do. But I think that the understanding is that that's probably how it should occur. In terms of your candidates, I think that Chris and Sherry did an incredible job interviewing 20 candidates and then bringing forward four excellent, excellent candidates. And I took some notes, and I was thinking about the things that I know, things I see Sherry do, things I hear her do, and obviously bookkeeping skills are, need to be there. But I have to tell you, I think customer service is huge, huge, huge. Even today, I stopped by to say hi, and she was, she answered the phone and was talking to someone. And so my thought was, is that the best, and it'll be interesting to see what you guys think, but for me, and one of the people that I know, and I know her pretty well, and I've known her for probably 5 years, that's candidate three. And I know that she's an incredible problem solver. She's got more energy than I can't even tell you how many people. And in terms of multitasking and what she does, and she goes to people's offices and she organizes their offices, and then she still has ideas and at the end of the day. So she's an incredible, incredible problem solver. But I think in terms of everything, or what I was under the impression, and I didn't see people's resumes, so of course, you know, I don't have that to look at. But the questions and their experience and how they conducted themselves, probably if I were going to vote for one candidate, it would probably be candidate number two, okay? Candidate four, very, very competent, very good answer for customer service and conflict resolution. But there was something about her that I found intimidating, and I don't know why. Maybe that she's OCD and I'm OCD and you know, really organized and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a real good take charge thing. But there was something about her that I just found, I don't know. It was odd. I found her like a little intimidating, like that you'd almost think to say, oh, wait a minute. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. And that you'd kind of be apologizing. But maybe I'm wrong. And Chris and Sherry interviewed her before, and she clearly is an incredible candidate. She's a very good candidate. But the one I felt the most comfortable with in terms of being around and how she'd be on the phone and her level of maturity and professionalism and how relaxed she was meeting people and just everything. I thought that candidate number two, I wrote here, very solid, good match with skills, used to schedules, used to multitasking, good answer to conflict resolution, good answer to her long-term goals. She has a banking background, and she just seemed really, really comfortable and solid. So I thought I'd say that. And like I said, you know, candidate number three, I know really well, and there would be no reason, in a sense, not to hire this person. But the one, like I said, I felt the most comfortable with was two. Number one, I wrote, did well, good answer to customer service, good answer to conflict resolution, said she's comfortable working alone, good bookkeeping background, good computer software background. So anyway, okay.
I appreciate your input.
Thanks, Amy.
Very insightful. And thank you for the citing on the open meeting question too. I don't think that we were fully, we weren't focused on that. It was really more the interviews. Sure. Understood. Okay, great. Then let's, again, time-wise, Phyllis, are you ready to ready to go? Okay. It's not optional anymore, Phyllis. Phyllis.
Yeah.
It's not optional anymore. You have to use the microphone.
Thank you. Thank you.
And if you can pitch, you can go to Boston.
Thank you, dear. And Mark Robinson, Compact Cape Cod, also an authority on conservation restrictions and water issues. And I'll let Chris's, because she's chair now. I'm vice chair now.
Oh.
I'll let her.
Chris, you have to use the microphone.
I learned.
Okay.
Thank you. We're here, as I hope that Chris.
I'm sorry, if you would you just introduce yourself and your position? And
Chris Clark, I chair the Land Acquisition and Preservation Committee for the Town of Barnesville, and I have spoken with your superintendent Chris and explained how we have been going from village from water district to water district. We started alphabetically, and actually took Hyannis out of order, but we have visited Barnstable, Hyannis, and CRMM, and we've come to see you now. Part of what we are doing is to canvass the officials in each village to see if there are parcels of land we should consider for acquisition by the town, and our committee would collate all the suggestions from all the villages. We've been asked to present the compilation of them all to the Community Preservation Committee when we're done. So I expect that to happen at the by the end of the year. So we have to basically evaluate Katuit, and then we'll go to West Barnstable, and I expect to be done. So part of it is to see if there are parcels on your wish list that may contribute to preserve of the water supply, municipal water supply for Katuit.
Mm-hmm. Now, so under the definition of preserve, what are the options, if you will?
It's a spectrum, actually. We can buy it. We can recommend. We recommend to the CPC, and the CPC recommends to the town council for purchase or conservation restriction. The town has done some partnering in most cases. If there is a parcel that is probably directly related to the water district or water supply, chances are it would be more attractive to for purchase if the water district put in some money. That has been the practice lately, if it's particularly advantageous to one particular district, if you're using town funds.
So in that scenario, am I hearing that it would be, if we sought to acquire a parcel that would be for, say, the use of the waterworks, in other words, possibly a well, possibly another type of structure, as opposed to just protecting the water supply, do you draw the line there and say if it's for the use of the waterworks, you'd expect the district to contribute alongside it, or is there all? Do you always look for like matching funds from the district?
The town council tends to hope that there's matching funds or contributing funds. I'm not sure it has to be one-to-one match, but it looks like for preservation for open space, it would not be to buy land for a structure. It would be land that would contribute to water supply.
So like something in a zone of contribution.
Yes, but not directly. I mean, actually, I heard from someone from DEP who once told me that he thought that he would not support if CPC funds were used to buy Zone 1 land. He thinks that's the responsibility of the district directly. That it would be more, but this is one person's opinion. But anyways, our committee is charged with helping to keep current the town's open space and recreation plan. And one of the action items from a plan that was written and approved in 2010 was to do exactly what we're doing, is to visit the water districts and see if there is a parcel or parcels that would help preserve the water supply, the future water supply, current and future. And I prepared maps that I dropped off at your office that should give you an idea of big maps that should help with the information.
How accurate are those 400-foot ratings that you know on those?
They came from our town's GIS department. I put my money on it.
I think the only place where we have any encroachment on Zone 1 is at Station 3.
Right. I haven't stopped that until I looked at that map. There's a tiny bit of a parcel of the Sun's Bisley land.
Oh,
it's like it just shaves in a tiny bit, and maybe one of them ones in the front, it's borderline. It's either on the line or maybe it might be 5 feet in.
Okay.
But you can buy an easement. You know, there are many tools in the toolbox. Jackie and Mark are the experts, so I defer to them on maybe on what else we can do. But part of it is this is a chance. We to my knowledge, it hasn't really been done like this before, where volunteers are working for land acquisition, but we're appointed by the town council to kind of survey and see do we need to step up our land purchases, especially as it relates to water. Actually, when we first did the village of Barnstable, we weren't so focused. So if you have other parcels on your wish list, some that contribute to our criteria are like parcels adjacent to other protected land, parcels of a certain size that are worth considering for purchase, land that might have rare endangered species or some kind of historic preservation for historic artifacts or reasons.
Mm-hmm.
What else might have criteria? Near water bodies, scenic vistas. So those are more of the criteria we would use to recommend land for purchase. But preservation of the municipal water supply is far and away the number one criteria for preserving land.
Right. Okay. Well, then I think we could certainly focus on that. Is there a deadline that you would like to see?
We've been lumbering around. Some villages took more time than others. When we went to visit Hyannis, for example, they said, this is a great idea. They took our map. The maps we provided are from the town. And this was a good exercise, but we're going to go in an executive session. We're going to do our own thing now. Thanks. So they kind of are working with the town. But Hyannis Water Board is a different structure from all the others. So
right.
So they said, thanks for the idea, and we'll just handle it on our own for now. And then we went to CRMN, and actually they took care of their business in one meeting, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so their civic association and water took over the town was a thing. I think they didn't realize that the citizens are as concerned as they were. But as you know, here in the village, there are, neighborhoods around that place.
Right. Okay. Well, at least we're on our way to protecting one location we won't have to put on the list. So, Chris, I think from what I'm hearing is that this is something that as long as you've got the GIS information, you can just go through the maps and look at, I guess even based on your comments or someone else's comments about Zone 1 land, we'll still include that on the list,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll look at whatever else is in the Zone 2s that you feel may be of critical importance, and then you can submit that. You have all the contact information, right?
I can get it.
Yeah.
I can give you
And I suggest that Jackie and Mark, both of them, they are national experts in the field.
Yep.
So Pituit has got that extra expertise working for you. And I'd kind of recruit their input. And I don't know who will do this again, this kind of a townwide survey of going through the districts. CPC money is determined by what the CPC does. Of late, there had been support for spending money on historic preservation, and a lot of that money got spent on the town hall and former school administration building.
Yeah.
But But if we can, this is an outreach, where instead of waiting for parcels to float by and come to our committee for consideration, this is a strategic outreach that we're doing for looking at the people who know their villages the best.
Yeah, I can see it trying to stay ahead of the curve and mm-hmm. so that we're not showing up in crisis mode.
And of course, if you wanted to discuss this in executive session, that's your call. But we purposely made sure that we're not meeting with a quorum, so we don't trip that with our committee. Our whole committee team, it was a really thorough overview, but we had been admonished for doing so.
I see.
I put an email address on the back of that also. Just want to email some other information.
Yeah.
If I may, do you have any input, Jackie or Mark?
Just to say, when the town CPA funds are used towards a purchase, the town needs to get something in return, whether it's an easement or a conservation restriction or outright ownership of the property. But they have been very, very creative in ways to help. So don't think of it in terms of the big dollars. Think of it in terms of in what's most important to protect the wells. No matter how far away it is, because if it's far away and it's connected to another piece of land that might be part of a green belt, that might be another reason for us to move forward to try to protect it. So look at it don't look at it so strategically that you're worried about the dollars and cents. Look at it more strategically about what would help with the wells. And also look at it in terms of what might help you to site another well, perhaps, on an existing well field. So are there areas, because you need that 400-foot radius, so you need a fairly big area. There might be an area where you think there'd be a good water supply, but you don't quite have the 400-foot radius. Maybe there's a strategic parcel of land there that needs to be protected. So, and look at it from the perspective also that it's not necessarily something that the district has to purchase. It could be something that the Barnstable Land Trust purchases with help from the CPC to protect the water supply. It could be that you just need an easement in an area to help own and control that area within that 400-foot radius in order to comply with DEP. All those things are possible, so look at what you think is important to protect. From my perspective, and I haven't looked at the maps, one of the most important pieces of property in the village is the elementary school. What would happen if that changed hands, for instance? We all assume that it's always going to be a municipal use of the school. But we also know that that can change. So put those things on your list, too, that you think that are quote, protected now but aren't really necessarily protected, that might also protect the well.
Thank you.
Mark Robinson from Todd Way. I serve as an advisor to the Barnstable Land Trust. Just a couple things. I think one of the questions was, when we buy a parcel, does it have to be for protection or for production? Is it an either or? And the answer is really, again, creativity. Carve it up. You know, slice off a part that makes sense for production, and the district could pay for that, and then the town or the Barnstable Land Trust could pay for the rest. So just because a parcel sits in a certain shape, it can be carved up, just as we're carving up the Lowell Park woods, because it makes sense for the town to own their perimeter around the ballpark and the Barnstable Land Trust to own the rest of the woods for conservation purposes. I think that's a good example of that. The other thing is, we don't always have to be thinking about purchase. There are ways to preserve land through donations of land, conservation restrictions, and there are some really good tax advantage to people making those decisions now. And part of my job is to educate landowners about those tax credits through the state, federal tax deductions. They can be really powerful for, you know, properties that are in the $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 range because of the effect of the state tax credit. And another thing is that I walk around Kootuat a lot, and I know what we call the old post road as it runs from the cemetery up back to the old water tank. There are a lot of lots that front on Main Street that are long and skinny and run back to that old post road. And even though we have two-acre zoning now, some of those properties, maybe they're 2 acres, maybe they're 3 acres, they could put a conservation restriction on their rear. They'd still have a 2 or 3 acre lot to conform with zoning, but they would be guaranteeing that the rear acre is going to stay in the nice pine woodlands that it is now. And because we know that woods is the best way to preserve water, it's the filtration system for the aquifer. Maybe some little outreach program to some of those landowners to think about that. It may not be a big financial win for them, but it's something that they could do. Everybody could do something, and that's something that they could do. They're not using that back acre now. Let's preserve it forever so that it's helping the water system for everybody. It's a case-by-case decision, but we know that unless the zoning changes again, it's unlikely they're going to be able to put an extra house back there, so why not preserve it and show it as green on the map for the water supply. If you wanted to do some kind of a systematic outreach like that, we could identify parcels that it made sense and then put together a little letter and a little handout about tax benefits and have it come out of the district or from the Barnstable Land Trust or jointly. And, maybe you get one person that says, yeah, that makes sense, and they try it, and we have a little example, and then we can show other people. That's sometimes how we get the ball rolling. So just different ideas that could be thought about. And I really appreciate the commissioners being so much of a great advocate for us on the Lowell Park land. That was really inspiring to see at the district meeting. Thank you.
You're welcome. Makes sense. Okay, terrific. Well, thank you all. I appreciate it, and we'll certainly get to work on it. Sounds good. Great. Okay. Looking good. Russ, I see you back there. You're on. Yeah, you can do that.
I got some
words, you guys.
Coming up the side.
I just saw a couple guys walking up to the side door.
Nope, not with me. I can't go on tonight.
Okay.
Do we, Dan, do we want to do an update with the fiber optic and where we stand with that? And then I got plenty of here to talk about with the water tanks. So that'll take up a good. We got the 100 by 7 still?
Yeah, we're going to be on it by 6:30 more than likely.
6:30?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll be wrapping. We have an hour.
Okay. I guess I'd like to ask Andy, if you have any opposition, would you like to give an update on where Open Cape stands?
No.
Okay.
Come up here as well so Chris doesn't have to crane his neck. For your record, I'm Dan Borthams with Open Cape. So there's a project going on to look at how we connect all your tanks and well sites, and I've had my engineer Gary Parenkoff out there with Chris and some on his own looking at what the best routes are for it. A key aspect of that is an extended relationship with NSTAR for us, because I have to split the project into two pieces. One is the microwave piece, so that connection in from Santuit Newtown Road, where we've got fiber hanging already and ready to pull it all the way into that tank. That's kind of a separate relationship between us and CapeNet. Because of the funding aspects of that. So that one is most easily facilitated with getting into the NSTAR conduit there. That's requiring us to negotiate a conduit agreement with them, which we didn't have before. We just had aerial rights agreements with NSTAR, so that's underway.
The conduit running from?
From Santuit Newtown into the tank site. I do have a drawing of that. Sorry.
Okay.
From my last discussion with Russ, I had this meeting down on Thursday instead of Tuesday. So this afternoon, late, I was like, oh, no. So I have one copy of the drawing. But
no, that's okay. My question is, aren't those our conduits?
I don't know. This is all marked.
I mean, we put them in.
This is all marked with NSTAR power coming in and four conduits.
Because NSTAR is in there.
Do they have an easement?
Anything else with the pins, the conduit pins that go through the pins while they're there?
I believe.
Well, the ownership is the question, though. If you guys have ownership of the conduit and some rights to that, their general requirement is that they have one conduit that their primaries come in on, and they always want to keep a second conduit as a spare. So from the pole on the street to that first conduit, it's about 30 feet, they've got two conduits going into that manhole.
Don't they have four?
They have two from the pole to this.
Okay.
So we would have to bring in another one to keep their spare there. But from this manhole all the way back into the, you know, inside the tank property area, they have four. So three are spare, so we could get into that. It's just a question.
Then I'm going to say that it's the fire district owns the land. So a question about that. Fire district installed the conduits, and I know for a fact that we did not negotiate an easement with NSTAR.
Okay. Then it's a different discussion with them, other than them being there to protect their primaries, then we could do, you know, whatever you allow us to do.
There's other conduits there. No, they don't have more than two.
Well, there's definitely four. There's two just from the pole here that we could see.
Okay.
I don't know if there's some other ones that are stubbed somewhere, but from an NSTAR perspective, if you guys ran this, they may have run this other, you know, and they'll do one primary and one backup. So, again, it's just that 30 feet. And then we'd break out here at this manhole so we don't, you know, break out under a transformer or something for them. And it is definitely four all the way back there because, you know, short of this one, we've pulled all the covers off just, you know, going down the road and looking ourselves.
Yeah. Okay.
So that takes about $60,000, up to $60,000 out of the price if we had to do a whole different dig there. So if you guys have access to that, I'll go back with a different discussion with NSTAR.
Yeah. I'm 100% confident that we have access to
it. It caught them by surprise, and that was their first reaction to it, that, you know, they have to go check and you know, we have to do this new agreement, so we were just kind of following along. But
right. I can see their position. Yeah, throw up a roadblock, see what they say.
Well, I have something right now that they want access to. So even if I had to do this relationship with them, mm-hmm. you know, I would not come out on the negative side from a cost perspective.
Okay.
Because they want access to another 5 or 8 miles of fiber that they don't have with our current agreement with them. So, anyway.
Okay.
So this is the key aspect for me. So if we can count on getting in there, then, you know, take 600 feet of dig out. So, okay. Gary, I think, in talking to you before, Chris, wasn't sure on full ownership of that, so we were just pursuing with NSTAR.
Yeah. You guys checked in to NSTAR, and they said that they were going to get back to you on something.
Yeah.
Yeah, they it seems like they must have given you the roundabout because he came back, talking about having to put in a trench, thinking down the side.
Yeah, well, Gary's always looking for different options. So he was waiting for the formal, you know, NSTAR response, and they lost the whole request for a while. So I don't know if somebody just shelved it knowing they didn't have the conduit. But
who with NSTAR was your contact? It was Kathy?
No, we deal with the same guys we've done full licensing with as the starting point, and then go into their engineering group as well. So
I know they took a lot of money to begin from us to put that in, but to put the application in condition of saying design work and everything. So I don't remember the easement at all, but I almost want to say their contract to put it in. That's what I'll go back.
No, they did. It was put in under the tank contract, and they actually, I remember they required us to put in concrete in case the whole way, I believe, and we had it spec'd out as gravel, saying it's an access road, it's not a common public road. And I remember that was one of the change orders, I believe, in the original tank contract, an additional 20.
I can check back. I had all that contract stuff.
Right. There were a couple of things that happened with the road. I remember we had to widen it, and we had to deal with that conduit issue.
Well, I'll go back with them too, because again, I just roused them again the other day, and they said, "Oh yeah." And it's like we're starting from scratch in their mind again, so it just got shelved, I think. But anyway, I'll call them up tomorrow with a different perspective in mind. Now we still,
they were the general. I don't believe they did the electrical. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but normally the NSTAR approves the design once they start work order, and then they inspect the conduits being installed, and then NSTAR will make the final connections to the transformers.
Now, the other thing with NSTAR is for all the wells back off of Santuit Newtown, I guess this is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is on their right-of-way, and with our existing agreement, we should have no problem getting onto that right-of-way on the low voltage. They've got a high voltage and a distribution line in there, so that shouldn't be an issue for us. We just have to do the standard pole licensing approach, and we use UC Synergetic for that, who's done it for us the whole time. So that one should go fast, being NSTAR only and not Verizon. Some of the rest of them where we have to be in joint-owned poles or even get state permits on 28, you know, the timing aspect of that is the interesting challenge.
Okay, so that's to run, so what we're talking about is going on the poles from stations 2, 4, and 1, right, 1, 2,
yep.
4.
Yep. Yeah, here's an extension
okay.
of the other.
Okay, oh, there it is, yeah, I was looking for the other one.
Yep.
I got it. Okay, so that's down in the hole, and then you come up the hill, and then cross over into the their right of way. So, is there a lower set of poles there? I mean, I'm just picturing the major high voltage stuff.
There's two lines down there. Gary didn't put them both on here, but there are two lines.
Okay, that's all right. I never really focused on it. I'm usually looking at the Osprey.
There's two lines on there, lower poles, not high-tension lines?
Well, there's a set of high-tension lines which are double-poled, I think, and then off on the south side, there's another set of poles that are more distribution into, like, your well sites, for one thing, mm-hmm. and probably with some into the neighborhoods as well.
Correct.
So, okay. you know, we've done this before in numerous places on NSTAR right-of-way, and that's why they have certain access into our fiber as well. So I don't anticipate any problems getting on this part. And this is just a standard build from a cost perspective. It's not avoiding any dig, which is a huge issue, a
right.
huge cost savings.
Okay. And then does this tie, what are we seeing? Is this Main Street, the Main Street tank here?
No, this is.
No. Well, this is Santuit.
Yeah, the Main yeah. Street tank is further down, right?
Yeah.
No, this is two. This is just the wells.
Okay, so this drawing doesn't include the Main Street location. I get it.
Yeah, so what we do is bring a lateral like this back to the nearest splice point
mm-hmm.
Rather than break the fiber somewhere else. So we bring it back to another splice point. So that's why it's just showing that it comes up a couple of sections where we already have cable, so we're already licensed there. Our mounting block can take two cables as it is now. We can also slap another mounting block on top of it and hold four cables, all without changing our licensing. So
okay.
These pieces are pretty easy. Same thing for, which one's off 28? Is that well five? Yeah, same thing there. We bring it back past 130 and bring it down 28 to the nearest splice loop. So it's about four or five extra sections. But that's the easiest way to tie it into the network.
Right up to 28 going down, so it's a lot easier.
Yeah, a lot easier than going in through that neighborhood exactly. because there'd be a lot more construction work there, a lot more digging, a lot yeah. more you know repairing concrete and stuff, which is the biggest expense and the biggest hassle with getting permissions.
How does that with the state layout? Would you be looking to put that off the road? Because I know there's a fire control density fill when you're in the road, and that can raise price quite a bit, you know, 7 inches of asphalt for any trench.
We're aerial in those sections.
We
avoid trenching wherever possible. So everything on here, if we can get into the conduit system there, the only new trenching is on property that you guys believe control. The other tank down here, instead of going from the well site up to the tank, Gary looked at coming in where that charter school is. There's a pole line that comes in there that feeds the charter school. There's an abandoned set of poles going through the woods there, but that's about 300 feet where you'd have to do a trench through the wood as compared to 600 or 700 feet or longer from that well site.
Right. Well, do we want to hold off on the Main Street? I mean, is that the future of that tank still to be determined?
You're talking the old one with the cell sites on it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one's that's not the one I was talking about, so maybe.
No, you're talking about West Street.
West Street. Yeah.
Which either way we go, we're going to utilize that site, so we can keep that in the plan.
Yeah, and the tank that has the cell sites on it now, there's actually some other things going on that may facilitate that tank, whether it stays or not. And I can't talk about them in particular, but there's some other things going on.
Okay.
What I'd hope to do is have a price, we talked before about us RFPing this and stuff, but the easiest way to do it, because we're still in some internal strategy discussions within Open Cape, I've taken this to CapeNet. You know, they have certain rights on the network anyway, not exclusively for construction, but take it to CapeNet, it's the easiest way to get a price on it, and I hope to get that this week.
Okay.
And it's going to be, it's a big job. But we'll see what the pricing comes in. But the main concern was avoiding, any new dig work.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, realistically, we can avoid digging in 90% of the area that we need to run fiber,
yeah.
Except for something if we go underground to the West Street
West tank. West Street tank might, well, I think it would, because some of those poles that are sitting there now are so old, they're he went and cleared the trees around them so you could run a cable. The poles would just
not
be trusted very
okay.
long.
There is a pole line coming in from Old Lister.
Around the other side?
Coming in from Old Lister Road, which is where we drive in to get to the tank from up top, right next to the school. There is, if you had anything on Old Lister Road there itself, which I don't believe your network said today, but I mean, if it was, that.
Yeah. Gary is very thorough when he goes out and looks at all the different routes and looks at it from the perspective of cost and speed. And this one, cost and speed matched up.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
I think he's got the best the plan in there. And I don't have all the drawings for the West Street tank yet. And he was out today, so I couldn't grab them from him quick. But I can put this whole set together and send them over to you guys just so you've got a view of what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That sounds good to me. I mean, I like the approach of using that existing.
Yeah, we
send it out to everybody to view on their own.
Yeah, Gary draws these up and PDFs them, so
okay.
That's how you would get them. On the tank that has the cell sites in it, we talked before. I know some guys in the tower business, so I have made some calls on that just to see if there's something one of these companies could facilitate for you guys. One of them wasn't interested because they're kind of getting out of the business. They gave me a referral to somebody else who I didn't think would be very useful, but I can still make the introduction. I have one other one that was a surprise pop-up interest, and I'll put that together for you, too, in the next couple of days. And just, that's totally up to you. I just happen to know some of these guys and make the introductions, and you can deal with them as you need to. I can always be a reference for you in that, having a wireless background.
Have you ever worked with Industrial Communications?
I have not.
Okay. They were a client of ours. We did all the permitting for other cell phone towers. So I talked to one of the project managers over there, and he gave me the rundown of how they do it. It's an interesting process. I mean, I think when the time comes, we can have further discussion on that and explore those.
Just outside the fiber aspects, what I wonder about with those cell operators is what triggers you guys have in their contracts, to be on that tank to force them to move somewhere else. If you, condemn the tank or it gets condemned, I'm sure you've got rights to, kick them off, but they're going to go kicking and screaming anyway.
Right.
But if there is somebody else, facilitating a location that's really close because, even a couple hundred feet can make a difference in their cell coverage. So,
meaning that if there were options, they may exercise their option to do something else.
I can't see them going somewhere else, per se, but,
right.
Some of your other tanks, they're far enough away that it's a significant change in their coverage from that particular location, so the closer you stay to it. So if somebody comes in and does a built-to-suit tower environment for you on your property there, it maintains them there, however that, business relationship is between you and the tower.
Right.
I mean, you could become the tower owner, too, but then you have to fund it, so.
Wasn't there some discussion about their agreements had something in there saying that they had some type of right or something, the privilege to have a tower on that site if the tank was to ever come down? Did I hear that?
It's just a mobile.
Bring in their mobile unit.
Okay.
While we're doing repairs or something like that or something else.
Yeah, if we had get to a point where we had to do a total rehab or some type of a partial rebuild or whatever, they have rights. They have just rights on the ground to locate additional equipment there. To stay up and running
you know, for a period of time.
Yeah.
And having looked at that, one provider is in a shelter, which is more challenging to move. Two of them are in outdoor equipment cabinets, which are easier to pick up and move somewhere if they had to, but they'd probably run a, well, if you put a tower up first, then, you know, however they cut over to it, it would be up to them. But
lots of the water districts are moving towards cell towers, and we're going to get them out of the box and go ahead and run the cell towers. They have a property to do it, and we need to do it here. So,
yep.
You know, having a cell tower is not going to be the first one taking place to take,
especially
for a water tower. So.
Well, I'll make those introductions to you. You know, there's basic tower companies that will erect the towers and stuff, but some of these guys will come in and, you know, pick up part of the capital, and there's a rev share type thing, but that's just purely between you and them. But I'll make those introductions.
I did. I also spoke with Christy Senatore, Commission, about the rate structure of fees or anything along those lines. And she didn't have all the answers for me. One thing she did say is that she had a list of municipalities and buildings for at least the first year they were going to offer free service. And I asked her, well, how do you get a municipal building, and would a fire district count on that? And she didn't see a reason why it wouldn't. Again, it was still premature in the discussion on where we're going with the fiber optics, but she seemed very open. She said she could come down and have a meeting, discuss it. I mean, these are all things thinking about. If I was sitting in your shoes, obviously, if you lose the cell phone antennas off your tower, that's revenue that you have coming. So how much do you lose? And then if you have a tower get built, you know, that some other, the person that owns that's going to be collecting the revenue and paying you a land lease or something like that. Probably not going to be as much as what you're getting now.
You know, Verizon and AT&T have been doing LTE upgrades, so I don't think somebody's just going to take their cell site and go home, but they do need a place to put it. So I think there's going to be an influx of activity here next year on increasing cellular performance across the board. If one carrier does it, the next guy might react, so I think they're going to be there for a while. With the county, you know, the county issued an RFP for the CAIs that were not already connected or covered under other contracts. So the CAI is just a federal term for those that were, you know, connected with the grant money. So Cape Med has already brought on a number of those CAIs through, you know, what we refer to as commercial contracts, a lot of those being the schools. Both regional technical schools are on. Falmouth High School has been on for a long time. Barstable High School, Nauset Schools. So the libraries have been brought up recently under a contract with the state because the state's underwriting some of that with other grant money the state has at the State Library Commission. So the libraries are all on. So the county RFP really kind of shrunk back down to, I think, like 34 remaining town halls, fire stations, police stations, you know, whatever else was left on the list. What they have budgeted for it, I really don't know, but they were going to pick up the cost of all those for the next 2 years. They have a tiered structure. Cape Med is the provider on that, so Cape Med's the, you know, responder to the RFP and has been selected as the winner for that, with us, Open Cape, being a sub to them for certain aspects of their relationship. But they have a tiered structure. You know, the more connections, the average connection cost goes down. I have had a conversation with Christy just kind of on the side because I don't want to muddy the waters with the RFP. You know, still hasn't, or the contract still hasn't been signed with the county, and this whole thing has been working for over a year now. So, but I have had a discussion on the side with her about the water districts that we have other relationships with, and I'm shocked it hasn't come up yet from the town side, but I think there's going to be continuing discussions there for some aspects of this. But, you know, for getting the service, you certainly have an option of whatever you negotiate straight with Cape Net or whatever, you know, service aspects come through the county with Christy Senatore. Mm-hmm. Okay.
They should be signing that contract like any day now. It's finally been negotiation. They're all complete as of last week. I think it just has to go through the county commissioners for final approval and get signed. And then looking at the next thing, you know, adding additional municipal entities onto it. Be a good time for the discussion after that contract is signed.
Good news for us.
Well, it's good timing, especially because there's 34 guys ahead of you. You're not the first guys, and, you know, I have no clue if the county's going to do chargebacks at some point in time, chargebacks for, you know, new people to come on. You know, I have no clue. I just know what was, you know, written in the proposal. It's a tiered pricing structure, so the average price goes down the more people that are connected.
No reason we can't do the first water project.
Yeah, some of this will be easier to build than others, you know. Make ready for the utility companies for, you know, some of the poles along 28. Your guess is as good as mine. Anywhere from, you know, 3 months to 3 years. And short of, you know, political pressure, we really can't do anything to accelerate that process, unfortunately. So anyway, I hope to have a complete plan this week. I can send it to Chris and he can share it, you know. And we're using this as the basis for going out for CapeNet to price it, and then we all get to go see where we have leverage.
Good deal. Thank you.
Rather than leave partial, I'll send the whole package later.
Yeah,
unless you want to keep some of these.
No,
of
let's get, okay. We'll just keep it all together instead of having pieces of it. Makes more sense.
All right, my pleasure.
That's terrific. All right, Jim. Thanks for coming in. Appreciate your time.
I really appreciate it. We just got to get it moving a little faster here, so I think we've got to move it now.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, thank you very much.
Talking with Chris over the last couple of weeks, he let me know that the budget for the engineering pass for the water tanks I put together a more detailed scope, which I actually had put together quite a while ago, and that's how I came up with the $120,000 number. But what I presented with Chris was basically the approach for doing the plan for the new tanks. The general perspective is we know we want to take down the two tanks and put up one new tank, and whatever associated water main improvements may or may not be warranted with that. So it's broken into three major sections. And if you flip to the last, the 11x17 page that I handed out for you, that's always what everybody's interested in, is the cost matrix. And when I put these together, I have the three major sections, and I'll start from the top. There's more detail and description written into this agreement, but you can all read this on our own time. I'll just kind of go through and give a presentation on what each one is. But the first step is an existing conditions assessment. And what this basically is, I understand you have the survey that Weston and Sampson did in the lead delineation for the Main Street tank.
Correct.
Yep. So we have to do a similar exercise on the West Street tank, where you go out and do a site survey, see where the property lines are, perform the soil sampling for lead, and see what the extent of, if there's any lead contamination, what the extent of it is. We also conduct the deeper soil borings that go down, and from that we have to develop a geotechnical report, which comes up with a bearing capacity, and that's what's given to the tank manufacturer so they can design their foundation, and they provide that stamped foundation plan as part of their shop drawings. So there are some subcontractors working with this agreement. The two major ones are GZA, Geo-Environmental. They're the geotechnical engineers that come up with the report on the foundations, and then also Amory Engineers, who has extensive background in water modeling and water tanks. I did my co-op with them years ago when I was at Northeastern, but they're out of Duxbury. So, Walter.
He's still around.
Is he?
He is, yeah. So starting off, item 3.1 is a kickoff meeting where the gentleman from Amory Engineers is Rich Johnson and Pat Brennan. And if you want resumes, their backgrounds with water tanks is quite extensive. They just finished one up in Marshfield, which I was telling Chris that had something similar, that enclosure in the tank to keep the sampling taps from freezing. I know there's been a little frustration with the tank now, mm-hmm. with some of those wintertime operations.
Do you know how many gallons that tank is?
In Marshfield? It's either 1 or 1.5 million.
Oh, okay.
It's a good size.
Conserve, yeah. Yep. Difference. Yeah.
And they have a lengthy tank resume, and any of this information you'd be interested in seeing. They offered to come down for this meeting, too. I said it's, you know, in the time is right.
Yeah.
So we had a kickoff meeting. You know, we know the gist of the project. They had a lot of concern with the lead and the lag tank. I think if the tanks are filling equal now with the new water main that was put in. But that's one of the things they're going to look at when they do the model. Take a tank down, how does that differentiate the operations of the tank, and it's ideal to have them filling at the same time. We know, you know, an altitude valve is probably something you want to stay away from if you don't need it, but that's all things that the modeling, when we run the model, will come back and tell us. A little bit off track there. So 3.2, that's the existing conditions survey, where you send a crew out there to West Street and perform the field survey. Anytime we use another person's survey, we always do a couple field checks to determine the accuracy of it. At a recent project where we were told to use another survey, and that surveyor forgot to get 52 sheets of tie cards of utilities that were out there. So we learned a lesson pretty quickly about relying on other people's surveys. If we check, we do a very brief field check. If we find any inconsistencies, we'll tell, we give it to Chris in writing, say what it is, why it's important, how much it's going to cost to fix it. It looked good from what we looked at. Western Understanding, they're fully competent to do site surveys, so I don't expect any issue with that. The subsurface investigations, the phase one assessments, looking into past research, all the activities. We know there was a tank there, but again, it's a due diligence. I'm not trying to add extra tasks on here to give you an inflated budget, but you'd be amazed at some of the things that come across when you start doing research on a site. We've had a lot of projects where you take a few scoops down and you come into a fuel tank, an oil tank. If you don't know these things are here, they really bite you in the backside when it comes time to pay for them on the spot. Soil borings and oversight. That is the three borings that extend down to 50, one likely to 100 feet, which will develop your geotechnical loads, and then also a series of shallower borings to detect the presence of lead paint and any PCBs that may be out there.
Russ, how many borings?
Three deep borings for the tank, and that's used to determine the bearing capacity of the soils. And then we have budgeted 12 shallow borings, probably less than 5 feet, hand-dug excavations, because we have to start to delineate the extent of the lead contamination. So you start with a square, you take those four samples, presuming if you find nothing there, then you presume the site is clean. You go back a certain distance. If you find lead again, you have to keep going back until you start coming up with no reportable limits. Part of our work out there is to, I've always been frustrated with contracts in the past when you say, well, you got to take a tank down, the contractor says, is it lead paint or not? I said, well, I don't know, it's up to you. That's not an appropriate way to bid a project because you'll get very conservative construction costs. So the more detail and definition we provide about what lead may be out there on the site, we already know there's some for Main Street, we'll get much more accurate construction costs and bids. We even take it a step further to research facilities. We do a lot of work with solid waste and hazardous waste facilities to find out who's offering the best prices to receive that soil. If it's under a certain limit, for example, it can go to the Bourne landfill. If it's at a higher limit, higher limit, it has to go up to aggregate or somewhere else that, you know, may be at a higher cost. So that's information we'll have, and we'll provide that to the bidding contractors. Same thing with the steel. We'll search around and see who's taking the best salvage value for the steel and provide that for the demolition contractors. Really do a little bit of work up front to give you the best possible construction costs in the back end. And then we do have to do a series of the soil samplings after we collect those samples. And that goes out to the laboratory, and they come back to tell you how high or low the soil concentrations are. So we collect all the information, we put it into a detailed memorandum that also includes the disposal facilities, any other findings, how much estimated costs are. A fairly detailed document, but it's something that will be included in the specs as an attachment that will give the contractor the guidance they need to properly dispose of the material out there. The water modeling and system review, that's be performed by AMRI and QAQC, from myself, but also under Richard Taft from Amory. That's going to tell us what the optimal water main improvements are. I noticed down at that tank, it looks like a unique combination of water mains and sizes. And if you look at it first, you know, the first reaction is that there may be a better way, a more streamlined way to get better production, better performance of this tank. And when I say performance, is there a way you can get increased pressures, increased fire flows? I understand you don't have any real trouble areas now in town, but it might very well be the case if you expand a new main 100, 200, 300 feet to make a connection somewhere else, you could get a tremendous gain. Or to get that tremendous gain, you might have to extend a main 5,000 feet, and it's just not financially feasible. Mm-hmm. So that's what the water modeling is going to tell us. These tanks typically come with a 16-inch riser pipe. I think you can downgrade to a 12-inch, mm-hmm. and I want to say it's 8 and 10-inch that's around out there now.
West Street is 10.
10-inch.
Right now, and if you go out to Old Oyster, it goes 6-1-way, and it branches a four-way split, the 12 coming out the back, 6 coming out the side. And it ran a 4-inch main back in, I believe, the 70s, so that it would improve the flow in that area.
So maybe you connect with the 12-inch going straight to the tank. They're fairly simple modeling runs. You know, water main costs add up fairly quickly, and I know there's a certain budget we're working at. So that will be the result for the purpose of the water modeling. We also want to make sure that the tanks are showing that they're without the, when you take down the other tank, that they're operating in unison. You know, you don't want the one tank filling faster than the other. That will give you the assurance that you need to know you're not setting up any pitfalls with operations of the system. So that's really the upfront assessment work that we have to get all that information straightened out. And then from that, we move into the preliminary design, which includes really the same process with the San Tuo tank, putting a set of plans together. This will be a little more detailed because we do have the demolition of a few of the other sites. I've broken that out to the cover sheet, the notes, the construction details, demolition plans, proposed plans. The geotechnical report will also be a bound document that will be included into the specifications. We'll have electrical plans, something similar to the San Tuo tank. Nothing.
So, Russ, sorry, just to back up. So when A is complete, the geotech work, field work will be completed, but we won't have the report.
We will start with the geotech report will commence immediately after we do the soil borings.
Okay.
They have to collect some soil samples, do a sieve analysis proctor, do the blow counts, do their necessary exercises that they need to do to develop.
But the actual report is not, I'm just saying the cost of it is not included in that 38,851.
No, the cost is at 8,800, and that was from GZA. Okay. That's under the outside tech column if you go down, and that's under that test 3.9. That's because I carry that, they're going to have to come up.
3.9. Okay, I got it. Okay. 88.
310, the electrical plans, that's going to be similar. No real fancy electrical features. I'm sure the FAA is going to come back and say you don't need any lighting. I think we talked about something similar. Let's stand to it. You know, temporary hookup for a generator.
Yeah.
So no permanent generator. The instrumentation plans, that will coordinate with the SCADA manufacturer, and is it AD Instruments that still does your SCADA to make sure that you get all the proper monitoring and control. Obviously, we'll coordinate with Open Cape to make sure that fiber optics are incorporated into this tank. We understand there is an issue with the sampling taps freezing, so we're going to work in heat in this tank, whether it's a drop ceiling or a separate enclosure. That will be provided. Provisions for future. It sounds like the cell phone may or may not happen at this site, but to put in some provisions for a cell phone is a relatively minor. It's always good to have a few penetrations in the tank base to come back after the fact. If you ever wanted to run anything through it, it's very difficult to do after the fact.
I agree.
Putting together the specifications, if you remember the last tank, there was a little mixed up with the coating systems. We had specified, I think it was 6 to 8 mils, and the warranty required 8 to 10 mils. So that was an item we had to eat because, in my opinion, we should have caught that during the design. That's what you're paying us for, after all. So we do take some time to go through and update the specs, make sure we got the proper coating systems. Whether you want to go with the hydroflon, if there's a new paint coating, you know, those are restrictions. Exactly. This is a discussion. Larry Minkus, I believe he's still the local representative.
Yep.
Cost estimate. We can. Come up with the draft specifications, the draft cost estimate. We have here, I have just budgeted one after the 75% design and submittal review with the Kituat Water Department. Obviously, throughout the course of this project, I'll be meeting with Chris quite frequently. I see him probably once a week or once every 2 weeks, even when we don't have projects going on. So there's going to be frequent communication. And if you need me to give updates at any commissioner meetings, by all means. I'm assuming there might be some type of public outreach or public program. So if you need support at public meetings, I don't have every last little detail broken out on this.
Mm-hmm.
But again, with the number that's presented, that's a complete project. The permitting is FAA, and it's also the one, I believe on this revised one I gave you, it's the site plan review, which is also in there. I believe I put that in the agreement. I met with Chris yesterday to go over this, and I was just looking at that. So in the written agreement I sent you under the permit section is the FAA permitting and also the site plan review that will have to be done with the town of Barnstable. But that cost there will be the same. That will include both of those permits.
So in 316, we could include FAA and site plan review?
And site plan review. And I believe those are the only two permits you're going to need. You're not within any environmentally sensitive areas. There is a small DEP modification to a system less, and treat that one. Unless we're, if we're outside of the zone, I mean, we'll do the research to see if we cross any of the thresholds, but I'm fairly certain we're outside. If we're within a natural heritage, endangered species, priority area, habitat, I believe, you do have to fill out a project checklist, but those are very, you just look at the project site and look at the maps, and if you're within the area, you have to fill it out. I don't believe we are.
Okay.
But I can ask. With the houses around there and the development that's around there, I would be hard-pressed if someone said, oh, you have a little 50-foot diameter circle where some endangered species is right next to the tank, and you have to... and then once the permitting's out of the way, it just goes forward and you clean up the final design plans, which are somewhat mirror the preliminary. I usually just take half the time that's allocated for the each preliminary one to put it into the final design plans. We can have discussions whether or not how we want to bid this out. If it's a you want to take down both tanks, I would, at this point, encourage to do everything as one project, but something may come up throughout the course of the design that would warrant one tank staying up longer. Maybe you have a separate demolition bid for a tank, a separate, you combine one tank demolition with a new tank, you have three separate bids. I don't see that being a big deal to break it out. We do a lot of strictly demolition projects. So in a nutshell, that is the proposal. It's written in detail with these items are more detail on the written part of it, which we can all read. Do you have questions?
Yes, Russ, do we have an idea with this, when we do the water modeling for the system, how our system might work with just the NC tank up and the NC tank up?
You will, yeah.
So give us an idea of where we stand and we could optimize the fact that we break down the rest of the tank.
You can. It's very easy to do. You can run different situations with different well pumps running to see which ones, how you may want to cycle your well pumps, if there's ever a way to tie that into SCADA to automate it when one turns on. I don't know if that's how you do it now. We can look at all different variations with the modeling. I mean, there's time and budget work in there. I'm assuming there's going to be questions, and you're going to want to see different evaluations and exercises.
Are both the Main Street and the San Diego having the same height?
Yes.
They're all three of them?
All three of them are all the same meeting.
Yeah.
They all go up to 200.
224.5 is the overflow.
It's
the overflow.
Correct.
It's
that.
Right.
It's
basically 230 to the top. They basically, but that's the way that hydraulics work. They all go up to that level no matter what. That tank is tall, has more metal in it, or shorter, it's going to be by 10 feet. Then it means you can build it up around to top.
You can. Yep.
Just the overflow is make a difference if we have an issue with the two tanks.
You can vary tank heights. You definitely want to make sure you get it right when you do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. We don't have probably 10... The tough thing with the tank, it's the painting of it. You get a very short window in the spring and the fall. If you have any atmospheric condition, if the humidity is too high, temperature is too high, the paint doesn't take it, and you're dealt with a plague for the next for the rest of the tank. If that base coat doesn't stick, the primer coat, anything you put on top of it, you're going to be frustrated with and always dealing with it. So ideally, if we could design it this year, and then if we can get it built in time for a spring painting, get it online, or if for whatever reasons it takes longer, I wouldn't want to compromise the system under summertime demand. We'd look to probably build it during the summer. Is that with the last tank? Yeah, it was built in the summertime. And put it online in the fall. That's in the fall, correct. Yeah. And obviously by that time, we'd have much more solid numbers on you know, what the tank cost can be. I know it's kind of a range now.
What do you think are costs to hold up some?
In my honest overall opinion, I think it's the coordination with utilities can be troublesome sometimes with NSTAR. I'm not blaming them. I think, overall, you know, stress of importance in this, hey, what's the right way to do this project? You know, is it, do you piecemeal it together? Do you get outside contractors? My perception from the front was when you're dealing with any utility, I mean, you want them to be doing the physical connections, you know, because then you get a lot of finger pointing, and that's exactly how NSTAR does it. They require you, so that's why I kind of encouraged Open Cape to put the proposal together and say how much it's going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
As far as getting the tank online, I think that's going to be the easiest part. I do foresee communications with the cell phone providers. One thing I should call out with the proposals, I do list certain exemptions, things that are not included in this proposal, and it's to protect both of us. Some of it's boilerplate. Other things are custom to the job. So if we look at page, it's nice that the page numbers on this. It's at the end of the, it goes to 325 as the final task and has completion time. Service is not included, and then exclusions. The first one is what I talked about with the survey. If we go out there, we'll do our spot check to make sure that the other survey is correct. If it's not correct, we'll advise you of that, and we'll elect not to use that survey. Again, I just have to put it on there to protect ourselves. I feel that it's going to be fine, but we haven't gone out there in the field with the equipment to spot check their accuracies. If we do any samples or observations that lead us to believe there's a reportable environmental condition, if there's any odd odors, any bizarre fuels, any fuel tanks, any samples that come back completely erratic, that's remediation that's not included. Mm-hmm. I put that in there because we had one in the town. We took two scoops down, we hit a fuel tank, and it was a nightmare. If we have, one of the things we do is we screen, we have the equipment, is a photo ionization detector, PID. It screens for hydrocarbons, so whenever we do the excavations in these areas, it doesn't cost anything more, but we just field screen it. If we come back with elevated hits, it tells us there may have been a fuel release there. So if we get elevated hits with the PID, that's one thing that clues us into something that past may have happened at the site. Again, I don't think it's going to be there, but we just put it in. The asbestos-containing material, if we come across anything with asbestos, I'm 100% certain we're not, but you'd be amazed how many buildings we go to demolish, and, oh, there's no asbestos in here, next thing you know, it's...
Mm-hmm.
Quite
I think it's 1,100 feet.
Yeah, 4 point is a dollar to Forsyth Court. And it's part of the property that I believe we overtook it from Camp Conway. It might even be that old. I don't know. I'll go back with the military preservation. Was that the preservation?
Okay. There's a camp. Number four, the electrical items that we don't include. Now, the first one you may scratch is the security and surveillance system wiring and equipment. That's really what Open Cape's going to be doing. We're going to be providing the provisions, obviously, at the tank, any conduits or penetrations. But because they've stepped up and started to provide some detailed drawings with their approach and how they want to put the conduits in, I'd much rather say, well, what do you need at this tank to put this in? What type of fasteners or clips or conduits? We'll make sure that's there, but then they come along after the fact and put that in. Any decorative lighting, such as landscape signage or other, that speaks for itself. With the as-built and the record drawings, we typically provide the we usually have the contract to do that as part of the construction agreement because they're responsible for what was built. So in the specs, we will have that they have to provide a PLS stamped record drawing of the site once it's been completed. Commissioning, that would be whether it's NSTAR or whoever the utility is that turns the water department once the tank is online. And then lead design services, that's any of the, you know, the green technologies or any of the new systems they have for the buildings. This really more pertains to a building. But
right. It doesn't really apply here.
Right. But number five, that gets into the water main question, where is this base design, the budget, how I have it scoped, that includes the water main design to the limits of the parcel that the tank is on, just because we don't know the extent of what water main improvements we may or may not need. And again, I just wanted to make that clear that if for some reason we do elect to do another 2,000 feet of water main improvements, that it wasn't included under this contract because we have no knowledge of it. We really have to run the model to determine that. Number six, it's expected that there will be some coordination with cell phone companies. I haven't included a budget to do any detailed investigations for the cell phones, whether it's putting together RFP or bid language or any associate tests. I obviously get it that we're going to have to talk with the cell phone providers. We're going to have to get them on board, figure out what's going to happen, put a plan, put a strategy together. I don't have all the answers for those questions now,
right,
and that's included in this. But any real detailed drawings or spec work or anything like that dealing with cell phone towers hasn't been included as part of this. And I thought those are the exclusions. You'd be amazed how many hard lessons I've learned in the last 13 years, and that's.
Well, that's all right. Just one question. So, in running through the total of the tasks, to come to 116,006,
correct?
$116,006. Does any do you provide for contingencies in here? Is there any?
No, this isn't. And this is simply my kind of philosophy on engineering. If I include something in this project that we're say we're going to do to the scope, and I screw up the scoping or I mess it up, then it's on me to make it good. That was the reason why in the first project when we had that mixed up with the spec items, with the warranty, you know, I can't come back with a straight face and say, well, guess what, you know, you got to pay for my mistake. So if I leave out anything that's part of, you know, if I'm telling you those are the only two permits that we have to do, you know, if it comes across we need the natural heritage, then I'm going to do it and I'm going to get it done. I'm not going to come back because now's the time to put it on the table to explain for it.
Right. Okay. So these are hard numbers.
Yeah, and again, it's I'm confident in saying that just based on the experience. Now that I have, you know, several tanks under my belt, I feel pretty comfortable with the approach. If I wasn't comfortable, I wouldn't be sitting here right now.
Right. Dawn, you came in a little late.
Yeah, I did.
Any questions?
I have a question. I did have one question. Mm-hmm. Not so much about all the work you're doing here, which I'm very satisfied. It's the idea that we go down from three tanks to two. Mm-hmm. And the day's going to come when the sand to a tank is going to have some maintenance done to it.
Sure.
Which is going to shut that tank down if we do the inside cleaning everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Will we be able to meet the needs of the district with that one remaining tank?
It's a good question, and that's going to come down to our decision. Do we want a 200, a 250, a 300,000?
Yeah.
Ideally, the interior maintenance that would have to be done later on down the line would require the tank to be drained and taken offline if they did have to paint the inside of it. And I would think with a 300,000-gallon tank in the air, if it's an off-season demand when we're doing it, whether it's spring or fall, we should be able to support the demand. That's part of the initial research going back on the Tata and Howard report and seeing. I believe that spells out pretty clearly what the demands are at certain times of the year, whether it's winter or summertime.
Yeah.
But
that it exists with 400,000 this side of 28.
Well, obviously, when we did the each of the older tanks, Main Street and West Street, have both been rehabbed extensively, and we operated on 200. And I don't think we've increased our, you know, customer count by more than 5% since then.
It's really the concern is what happens if
maybe
a fire breaks out when there's
yeah.
a tank
okay.
being cleaned.
Okay.
That's
okay. Yeah.
So that was my guess. That was the only thing that
we should be fine. In the off season, we don't go any more.
If we have
250, 300 in the air, and you know, I have capabilities of pumping, you know, up to 3,000, almost 3,000 gallons a minute.
Well, I guess this leads to probably a tank that we want to have.
Right. No, that's
right. Going forward, it's about
you want too big because if you have stagnant water, then it becomes a mixing.
Yeah.
Issue.
Nope.
And
that's absolutely. Nope. We got to hit it just right.
You do.
But we do also have the. We have the build-out study so that we can pretty much peg where the maximum will be. And you're familiar with that.
Sure. Yeah, I would be surprised.
Is it public?
I think somewhere in the archives I could dig one up.
That's all right. I have mine.
Yeah. I would be surprised if the demand was ever over 700,000 gallons per day. I mean, I think there's only so much build-up that's going to happen to do it. And I think it stands around 600. And
yeah, 685, something like that.
Right. So now we have, 460 plus or minus.
Probably less, because this is the beginning, probably going to be top of maybe 5, 8, 5, 4, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5,
Really?
He wanted to come this time. I asked him to hold off.
We'll have a good discussion with the tank size and a few factors that go into that. You know, operational, security purposes, build-out demands, that there's steps. Okay.
Yeah, Russ, I know you've done a good job of what they do. Back on that fiber optic. I don't want to say that, but I was kind of surprised that it came back over the pole. For some reason, I had this impression of this system going underneath the ground on our paved roads, no issues, you know, full.
I would think cost-wise, I mean, ideally it's good to have them buried. You know, you don't have to deal with any severe outages or anything like that if there's severe weather. I'm encouraged to hear that next week he's going to look at a cost put together. I hope it doesn't really blow any of it. He's made no indication to me what the...
The thing is that I think you understand is they pick it up around the poles, they own it. Part of their network, it makes their chest a little bigger, give them a little more power.
I got you. I just have this, I just envisioned these two conduits that need to be put on the ground. This is not that high.
It's not, but how high? I guess, looking at it overhead, how does that compare cost? Cost wise, I mean, you're looking at 20 to 30 underground.
Yeah, they probably go overhead any time it's cheaper. They don't have to worry about trenching, they don't have to worry about burying it, getting rid of it, or anything like that. They can just go home and string it right down. So they get guys that do it every day.
Plus, their agreements are in place with the utilities.
Right.
It certainly streamlines it. I think, in the bigger picture, if you think about it, in a weather event, if the fiber itself is damaged in the loop, there, you know, Cape Net's loop, pretty much out of commission anyway. So, I don't know if there's a dramatic advantage to underground except for going back to repair it in the event of a severe weather situation.
Yeah, if you have a torrential rain storm, you know, you're not going to have people breaking into your pump stations in the middle of a tornado or a hurricane.
Right. The other thing is, too, I mean, to utilize a big portion of it on that NSTAR right-of-way, you know, that runs from the gate in town all the way down, that thing's wide open. It doesn't matter how much it blows unless those power poles come down.
It's above the trees.
Right, that's what I mean. Nothing's going to take it down, and if it's such a catastrophic event that those main power lines come down, well,
we all have to
more things to worry about after that. So, I think I'm comfortable with him proceeding on that course.
I would say we may want to encourage invite to the woman Christy from the Cape Cod Commission to come down. Beyond all else, is perception. She sees the intent that the fire district wants to move forward with this and sees how important it is to them. And, you know, I've seen these projects a lot. When the momentum dies, that's when the project dies. And so we have to keep positive steps, you know, keep Dan in the loop. And I've been calling him every week or so, just putting the bug in his ear. But I guess that would be one recommendation I'd have, is that one of these upcoming meetings, and maybe invite Chris to come down and just explain from her side, you know, where do you stand? I'm really eager about doing this. Where do you stand? Correct. And yeah, when I spoke with her last, she said she would be willing to attend the meeting and share her thoughts on it.
Okay. Very good. Any other questions? We're good. Great. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Not a problem.
I'll be talking to you very soon.
Sure.
All right, Chris. Thank you. Thanks. Have a good night.
Appreciate it. Just going down the agenda, I noticed in E, we have Barnstable Land Trust. Jackie, did you have other items that you wanted to discuss tonight?
No, I just found it. It was on here, so I was here. I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you so much for your support and your support. It was a little heartfelt from you all.
call up with him again and tell him exactly what he's going to need.
How much time he needs, leeway time he needs.
Right, he might need a little time in between. He could give him a heads up. Or he might call him and sign and say, listen, I don't know if you're going to do it between this month and this month. Because we'll let it go.
Okay, I did review it, and I don't have much for comments.
I do know you. I understood you very clearly about how you describe passive use to the land. Not everyone has.
Understood?
Yes. Someone thinks passive use is a 9-hole golf course. Just so you know. I'm just putting it out there. I don't want you to be surprised.
No, so natural disaster or the trees are infested somehow have to come down. Our goal is to just leave them in the natural disaster. Passive is funny, but passive recreation, we're trying to work with the town to develop a definition of that. But that would leave me in my home golf. If there is a 9-hole golf, I think you do it, it would be effective.
That's right. That'll be coming up. I just looked through my notes. I have about a dozen comments. Most of them are, sort of just defining things and regarding with notice and a few other things and an exhibit for that depression that may or may not be filled in, which is the sites and exhibit, but we don't have them yet. So just a little, I'll finalize that. And I think, I don't know, have you guys had a chance to review it at all?
I did look at that.
Yeah. Right. This was, I had done this in advance of our last meeting. Yeah. And I think some of the questions I had a chance to talk with Mark about that evening, and he addressed most of it. So, yeah, I don't think it's a complex process for us to.
We're in the process right now of applying to the CPA funding. We put in our letter of intent. They have to accept it and we'll put in the full grant. When we put in the full grant, we also include a conservation restriction, so it would be nice to include your comments in that. So what they have is your comments.
Okay.
At any point, not to those two, but at any point, if you want, just kind of mark up.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what we'll do is just email you the comments and then we could schedule for the July meeting here, which is like around the 17th, I think. We could probably wrap it up at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should be okay. I'd like to email ahead of you.
Simple, that's the A-D-I-D-O-P-O.
Jack, you can catch.
So let's go back up. B, security system. We've covered that with Dan and Russell. West Street Tank. We covered Russell. Interest rate is done. Brings us to office manager position. So on the 11th, June 11th, the board interviewed the four final candidates for the office manager position. They were recommended by superintendent after review of all the applicants. The board interviewed four of the applicants, and following a vote taken in executive session, we voted to offer the position to Ms. Jennifer Ledger, and then subsequently voted to offer her the salary of $42,500 annual salary. The offer, the official offer was made to her following that meeting, and she has accepted the position. So we have a potentially the new office manager. She'll be starting with Sherry, I believe, July 2nd.
I believe it's July, I was going to say July 1.
It is July 1st. Okay. I don't know why I put it in my notes. Like a second. Okay. And then, Amy, you had asked at that meeting about an opportunity to review the resumes that had been submitted. Is that something you were still interested in doing?
No, but my understanding is that the vote needs to take place in open session, and that votes do not take place in executive session, but only discussion. And so that open session would have to, I'm trying to think of the right word, something about
confirming,
but that all voting within open session.
That's how we've been hiring the other.
Yeah,
I sort of the way
always
done.
Yeah,
okay. And you're not the only people to get confused by them. But I'll get the right language. But it's but discussion and then votes are in open session.
Okay.
We could have gone.
I believe it's important that we vote now.
Yeah.
And get that on the record. And it's interesting because we do have potentially we're hiring operators, as we've had two operators leave the department. So we will get tuned up with you.
All right. If that's the case, then I'll make a motion to hire Jennifer Ledger. At this stage of the game, be it late or not, with the salary of $42,500 to take Sherry's job as the office manager.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Votes unanimous.
I don't have any problem with doing this second vote just to make sure everything's done correctly, but I work in a municipality and people get hired all the time, and I don't know anyone that has been voted on at the selectmen's meeting. I really don't. I would have no problem going through this just to make sure all our bases are covered. But
well, we can do this.
It could even be a factor of.
Well, we only do it every 30 years, so nobody's got the real background on it. I think for the record, we can say that we certainly reviewed the resumes of four qualified candidates. There was discussion was held in executive session that related to the qualifications that were in black and white on the resumes. And then additionally, because this is a customer service type of position, discussion was held on the qualities of the candidates for things that they exhibited in the interview that were something that can't be put in black and white. Based on that, we felt that there were, we narrowed it to two, and then again, assessing the qualifications that we could read about and the qualifications that we assessed from the interviews and from superintendent's interviews, we established a unanimous decision for Ms. Legend.
That was candidate one.
Yes, I believe so. So that was the background of it. That's
Well, and like I said, great candidates, all four very excellent candidates.
I agree. I think we're all left with the impression that if we had four positions, they would have been filled that night. It was a very positive situation. Okay. Then that is as much as we can cover with that for now. And then lastly, I'd like to pick a date for
the warrants.
Oh, we have warrants.
Yeah.
I apologize. And Chris, you have
I have a quick report.
A quick report to take as well.
Well, you guys are signing, and I'll go over the water quality. We didn't have any problems. We actually did get our manganese results back. They were a tiny bit lower than last year.
Second line kind of guy.
Manganese?
Manganese, yeah. It's down. It was 0.7 average before. 0.07, now it's 0.06. Which is still above the 0.05, but it's a secondary contaminant.
Okay. That's just got me on it. All right. How's Brian holding up on call?
Well, he's on call right now. He actually hit the wall last night. But he's getting better. His knee's getting a little better. He's not as gimpy as he was when he came back at the beginning of the week or last week.
Right.
But I had to take him last week because of his ankle, and he had
Or
the knee and everything.
What's the okay? So what's the timeline for
advertising?
Advertising has been put in the paper. It's on second week. We have 5 applicants right now. I have another one supposedly coming in the mail. Tommy Schultz. He called me and said he's going to send them, and somebody did. Please.
Okay. Well, salary expenses going down.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's the, I'll go over what I have here in my report, basically, at this point, unless anybody has any question on the loans.
No, I guess this is the one I usually do.
Yeah, some of these are hand because of the first one of the new year. We don't know. Some of them are partial pay and not.
Yep.
But we'll go from there. All right, I'll give you my report made. 2013, we pumped 18,047,000 gallons. May of 2014,
we pumped 19,888,000 for a difference of 1,841,000.
Wait,
quite a bit more.
19 million?
Yeah.
You said 19.
Did I say 19,000?
No. Okay, 19 million.
Oh, it's on tape. No, I know. 19,888,000.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's a difference of 1,841,000 increase.
Yep.
And it's been much drier than it was last year. Between the flushing and everything else, it's up and down. So I don't think it's going to go too low, to tell you the truth, with some of these. We had 3 new services put in the month of May, all in Kachewett Meadows. We had a replacement service put in over in on School Street.
Yep.
Brian Dacey has requested to come to the next meeting to ask again for a break. He wants to do it in person. He says, I'd like to go just ask, plead my case. I said, you got that right, you can do it. So I just let you know. And we're going to put him on the agenda for July. Tell him to show up.
Okay.
I did give you that Sprint contract last month.
Yep.
That's going to be, like I said, it has to be due. It runs out in August. So
right, August 5th.
Yep, so we either have to sign it next month or something.
No, I reviewed it. There's a few things in there that definitely not.
Okay.
You know, we can clean it up. It is just an amendment. It's a one-page amendment. So I'll look at those terms. You and I can just run through it. We can vote on it on the 17th.
Okay.
That still gives us the time to execute. It's 3 weeks before it needs to be executed. They'll be able to vote on it.
Right. Tomorrow night in this building, there's supposed to be a meeting for the extension of the paving to go on down the end of Main Street. Informational meeting.
Barnstable engineer?
Yeah. I called the Barnstable engineers, and they told me they weren't too they didn't know anything really about it. So I got a call into Roger Parsons. He said unless he has something to do with it, him and Tibbetts. So Roger owes me a phone call. I'll definitely let you know in the morning. I was called by Eddie Edwards saying that he was told from Justin Grissetti that there is a meeting here tomorrow night.
Huh.
I didn't see anything on the schedule online, but there's a good possibility at 5:30 tomorrow night that there'll be an information. Yeah, 5:30.
Okay. So that's really just has to do with their design and scheduling and whether or not they're going to do 2 conduits or 1.
Our design is finished and ready to go. It just has to be delivered to Tibbetts.
Yeah.
All right, and as you know, I'll go with the operator's position now. Basically, we're hoping to hire by June 30th is the deadline, so hopefully we can hire at the next meeting. I would like to bring, I don't know how you want to approach it. Do you guys want to interview? Do you want me to interview and bring you my strongest candidate?
Yes.
Okay.
Because
because clearly I don't know what skills to stand up.
Okay.
No idea.
We had our service contract today.
Oh, the bid?
The bid. Yeah, opening. Yeah. Bordelotti Construction was $31,385.70. And Roderick Construction was $48,826.90. For a slight difference.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they Bordelotti pennied new installations. They get a $300 minimum on an installation, and they gambling that we're not going to have anything really that they can't do in $300, you know, do for a loss. So they got quite an under at that point.
I'll say. Well, that's a good little bit.
Do I need a motion to award it to anybody? Have we done that in the past?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll make a motion to
it. Let me read a motion for that figure.
I make a motion that we award the bidding contract.
Service
to Bordelotti.
And emergency repairs.
For $31,385.70.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Aye.
Votes unanimous. They're the low bidder.
All right.
Substantially low bidder. Yeah.
And the last thing on my report is, I was wondering if you guys would give me that on-call pay that's already been budgeted. I did look up in the notes. That's the motion that was made when Brian was sick back in the minutes of 2000. Is the date on there?
Yeah, 2009.
Okay.
I make a motion that during this time frame of being down two operators, that we give Chris the on-call pay and the superintendent the on-call pay during the time frame that he is on call.
As he has been awarded in the past.
I second that motion. Any further discussion?
No.
I concur. It's well above and beyond the normal tasks, and it's not without precedent, especially with this severe understaffing. We need all hands on deck. So that's good. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. Very good. Pick a date?
17th. I'm working. I'm good the 16th.
Okay. July 16th. That's a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Oh, no, it's not good.
Yeah. I'm not good Wednesdays.
Okay. Well, that week I work Tuesday and Thursday. The next week I work Wednesday and Friday.
Twenty-second, Rick?
What? Tuesday the 22nd?
On a Tuesday?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So Thursday?
Thursday.
Oh, so the first, so that'll be the 15th.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
So we're good.
Be here on the 22nd. 22nd sounds good.
Well, there's not bad. You guys kick us out of here, so we have to leave. And they can grab some snacks on the way out.
Or you can stay for the meeting. It's no obligation, though.
All right, so 22nd, right?
22nd, yes. Right here. 5 p.m.
I make a motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.